This is the second part of a two-part series about Soulfire Farm, and the latest edition of our series on farming in the Capital Region. Back in October, I took the opportunity to visit Soulfire on Community Day. I spent the day out there, working, talking to people, to get a sense of what the farm is about. Soulfire is all about community and education and empowerment, and they have a very clear set of goals.
Well, hi everyone. Again, my name is Leah Penniman. I am one of the co-founders and farmer program managers here at Soulfire Farm. Yeah. And I'm super happy that you're here. So grateful. We're gonna do about a 30-minute tour and talk, and you can like ask questions throughout. And Amani will be joining in a moment if she's not already here and do some of it with me. So Soulfire Farm is a project that was officially born in 2011, although we did start working this land in 06, and it took us that chunk of years to build the home that you probably use the bathroom in, which is a straw bale timber frame solar home, and to get the soil to a place where it could support plants. This was a highly degraded piece of property where the land had been logged, the soil had been all washed down the hill, just leaving behind clay and rock. And so we've done the best we can to honor the legacy of the Mohican people, who are the rightful owners of this land, the First Nations people, by making it better every year and by using a lot of indigenous and traditional African methods to do so. The mission of Soulfire is to end racism in the food system. What we mean by that is right now, the people who do the work to grow the food are not the same people who get to eat good food and not the same people who get to own land. And there's a long history of that, starting with the genocide of First Nations people and moving through enslavement and convict leasing and sharecropping and guest worker programs like Bracero. There's a really long history of land and food being used as tools to oppress people, especially people of color. And so we're trying to rewrite that story. And the three main ways we do that is, one, we have a farm, right? And our farm specifically grows food for people who otherwise would not have access to that food. So we do a doorstep delivery of a box, bushel box of like 15 items every week that goes to families in neighborhoods living under food apartheid. Food apartheid is that system of segregation that allows some to have food opulence like Whole Foods and farmers markets, and others not even to have enough nourishment to be able to learn and to be able to survive. We have an epidemic of like diabetes and heart disease and obesity in our communities that's directly tied to what types of food are available to people. So that's the first thing we're trying to do. The second thing is about training, equipping, and inspiring the next generation of farmers and food justice activists of color. So if you come here in the middle of the summer, at any given time, there's tents all over the place. That dishwashing station is popping, the music is popping, and it's because there are 20 to 30 folks on week rotations coming through to learn and then be part of our alumni network. And so we do Black Latinx Farmers Immersion, we do an Uprooting Racism Farmers Immersion. We work with youth, we have a youth immersion and youth day programs. And the last thing we're doing is movement building. So we are part of a national alliance called the Heal Food Alliance, as well as the National Black Food and Justice Alliance. And we try to gather up all the information about what's broken in the food system and pressure the people who have power to change those things and to give up their power. So that's policy, that's corporate organizing, that's like, you know, grassroots exchanges of reparations and things like that. So that's like the big picture overview of what we do.
The other co-director of Soulfire is Jonah Vitale Wolf. I had a chance to talk with him as we worked in the greenhouse clearing out the space for winter.
So one of the major impediments for people getting into farming is just the economic end of it. And that extends from acquiring new land to developing that land and building up a market. Mm. Could you maybe give me an idea of how you approached all of those things?
Let's see. So the economic end, yeah, it's tough. I mean, like, we live in a hyper-capitalist economy, which bases its wealth on not valuing land and labor. And so our farming system, since its inception in this country, has been based on stolen and unpaid labor. And so that has not changed, where it went from legal slavery to sharecropping to convict leasing, and today, after, you know, the Great Migration, you have 4 or 5 million African Americans moving north from the South. Someone's got to replace that labor, and that labor has been systematically replaced with Mexican, Caribbean, Latin American labor through the H-2A program. And so it's a system in this country that is not designed to support the people doing the work. And it's only natural that in a system that does not value its labor, that it would consolidate. So what we see, people say that the food system, it's, we gotta fix this food, the food system's working exactly as it was designed. And so we're really trying to look at creative ways for people to integrate both food growing and food education into like all of their lives. So a lot of our graduates may not be farmers, but they are community chefs, community organizers, health workers, you know, like, and what does it mean to be not only connected with land, but then the skills around that is deeply healing and deeply powerful in terms of what you can actually do. And we're working with like the farmer census to actually acknowledge urban farmers as farmers now. And it's things like that. So I think there's certain ways around land acquisition, like land link programs, aging out farmers, of connecting people. There's a little bit of like NRCS, which is a USDA branch, funding around low interest loans, favoring minority and women and beginning farmers, stuff like that. But it's just not much. So the finances of it are tough. As a farmer, everyone's got to be a hustler. You got to have your thing. Our thing has been education. We kind of consider it in a way one of our value-added products. So we're not hustling at farmers markets or making the jams and the sauerkrauts and stuff. But that's what farmers got to do. Having like really efficient systems. Also like the collective kind of environment of doing things. For us, it looks one way. For other people, it might look another way. But I think there's a way you can look at sharing equipment, sharing materials and supply ordering, even sharing land and having creative land access arrangements that are like long term. I mean, it's a...
And this is with other farmers in your area?
We do a little bit of that. I mean, again, we're a little bit of an island because we're not in like prime farm area, but there are examples out there, and I think,
know, but I like what you've done with this.
Thank you. I mean, it's, you know, again, it's like we don't do outreach for like any of our stuff, and I think it speaks to how relationship based we are. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just been about caring for our community and also about meeting the needs of like what people are really asking for, not like not going the other way around. Oh, I really want to, you know, do this thing, so you need this. But actually really having our ear to the ground based in relationships.
When you go out to Soul Fire for Community Day, you have a chance to contribute, but you also have a chance to learn. And Leah, especially, and Imani take every opportunity to instruct people on their methods.
One way is copying other farmers. So that's what you always do in your field. But probably on a deeper level is we're always trying to look to our indigenous and ancestral African practices and figure out how do we adopt those. And also how do we credit those? Because there's the whole like permaculture movement, like much respect to y'all if you appreciate that. But it really is just taking indigenous ways of knowing, rebranding it, and making college-educated, white, mostly men, wealthy off of like permaculture certification programs. So we're not really down for that. And so what we're trying to do is give true credit. Like, these raised beds, those were started in what is now Kenya in the Ovambo region, the whole idea of like raised beds. You know, intercropping simultaneously arose in what is now like the central plateau of Mexico and sub-Saharan Africa. So all these techniques we're using, obviously people didn't have like roll plastic back in the day, but they did use banana leaves and other things to mulch and smother. And in the island where my mother's from, in Haiti, people do that technique. And so we're always like, what our ancestors do, because they held it down, they were able to feed the community without destroying the earth, and how do we continue to uplift and and bring those methods into the light. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one thing that I love about this space too, when we're talking about indigenous ancestral practices, this terracing system also simultaneously arose in Mesoamerica and sub-Saharan Africa. In Africa, it's called fenyaju, which means throw it upwards, because you literally take the soil that's eroded down the hill and you throw it back up to make these little steps, right? These terraces were actually built by Oaxacan farmers who are friends of ours from down further in the Hudson Valley. Right after we got back from Mexico, we were very inspired around terracing and invited some friends over, and they like showed us how it's done. So normally a slope like this, you know, you wouldn't plant on because you're going to lose everything into the woods, but making these steps holds it in place. We have the apple trees, and around the apple trees we have some chives to keep away the pest of the apple tree. And then we have things like rhubarb and sage and bee balm and lemon balm and mints. And all these herbs aren't just random. They're all things that actually are what our community needs most. And the people who come to the farm, so it's about lowering blood pressure, anxiety, depression, sleep, immune boosters, concentration enhancers. And so we will come down here if someone needs something, pick it, make the tea, and do what we can to heal ourselves.
I also had an opportunity to talk with volunteers. This is a recording of Forrest, who has been out here many times.
I'm Forrest Lyons.
And you're out here doing volunteer work?
Yes, I am.
Have you? Is this your first time out, or you've come out a lot?
No, I've been with these guys since 2013, I think, for the BLFI, Black Latino Farmers Immersion Program. And I've been coming back ever since, about once or twice a year.
Cool. Tell me about that program.
It's a program where they're teaching people of color about land and land sovereignty and growing your own food. And it's a, I think, four or five day workshop. From that, you know, people brought back what they learned to, you know, community gardens or their backyards. And, you know, some people are trying to start their own farm, things like that. Like, as far as for me, I'm just learning about farming and gardening so I could apply it to my, you know, mental health job, teaching kids about healthy food, getting them off the meds.
So tell me about your job.
I'm a youth counselor, and it's, you know, working with children that have ADHD, oppositional defiant disorder. So my title is behavioral assistant. So I'm trying my best to incorporate nutrition with mental health. Then it's not an easy thing, I'm learning.
Mm-hmm. I would think, because I've done some farm work myself. I did a couple internships out in Washington State, and and I'm doing some stuff around here too. Just the actual physical action of working and farming would be great for mental health. Are you able to bring your kids out here at all?
Not yet. I haven't tried, but I'm going to discuss that with Jonah and Leah. They're the owners, about like maybe ending like the last session, bringing them out here for a day and volunteering, because it helps, you know, it's therapeutic.
I'll close with a recording I took just before lunch that day, when the volunteers and workers and alumni all gathered around, essentially to celebrate what they were doing together. I'm Dave Pablo for WOOC.
All right, so for our gratitude, we're going to do a one-word grace. So your job is to think of something that you are grateful for. When it's your turn, call it into the middle, and we're going to echo it back to you. All right, in the end, we'll give a big ashe, and we can enjoy the food. So we will start with Nishima.
Sunshine! Oh God, me already. Community.
Community.
People.
Empowerment.
Empowerment.
Friends.
Education.
Friends.
Carrots.
Excitement.